Today we're going to look at the anxious child. Now, every child is actually the anxious child at some point, just like every parent is the anxious parent at some point. Anxiety is a normal human feeling. We feel it when we're going to have a test, and we know that children have tests all the time at school. We feel it sometimes when we're in a new experience, something that we're unfamiliar with and just don't know how it's going to be. And this happens to children all the time. They have so many first-time experiences, like that first haircut, the first day at school, the first swimming lesson, and on, you know. And also, even though they're not the first ones, but the repeats of the first day of school every year, or the first new group of swimming, or the first new group at camp, and so on. Lots of new experiences in childhood. And since new experiences cause anxiety for everybody of every age, we know that children are going to feel nervous or anxious or uncomfortable, actually a lot of the time. In fact, in the first 3 or 4 years of life, being fearful isn't even considered an anxiety disorder of any kind, because children are naturally overwhelmed by everything around them. It's a new planet. Can you imagine what it would be like for you if you actually were transported to a new planet and all that was there was a bunch of green aliens and weird things and you didn't speak the language and you didn't know what to do there? How long would it take for you to acclimatize and feel perfectly comfortable? Well, that's what it's like for our little people as they enter the world. So naturally, they're uncomfortable, unsettled, concerned, fearful, and downright anxious in the first few years of life. And then a lot of that passes. Now, some kids are born more fearful than others, and some are born very confident and fearless. In fact, their parents wish they had more fear, because those kids like to hang from the rafters and jump off the railings and all kinds of things because they're fearless, right? But the more timid by nature child, you know, has fears beyond what the average child has. So we're going to look at some of the kinds of fears that kids have, and maybe through looking at this you can distinguish whether your child has normal levels of childhood fear or whether maybe your child is suffering from a little bit of anxiety. And if you can't quite figure it out yourself, you will have enough information at the end of today's talk to know what to ask your doctor. So let's look at the categories of anxiousness that are diagnosed by a mental health professional when an anxious child is brought in. The first category we'll call GAD, which is G-A-D, GAD, General Anxiety Disorder, Generalized Anxiety Disorder. This is really a disorder of worrying. It affects children and adults alike, but in childhood, we see it as the child starts to have something to worry about, right? Like, they may look worried before they can talk even, but when they're in school, you know, they might worry what the weather's going to be like, and they might worry about what we're doing today at school. Just even that could be preschool. And then as things go along, the child might worry about whether you're going to be home on time, whether, you know, mommy and daddy are staying in, if they're going out, when will they be back, will they be okay? A child with GAD, or Generalized Anxiety Disorder, worries about an awful lot of things and usually has so much tension that the child is actually physically tense as well. There's a feeling of being kind of, they call it keyed up or on edge. And as a result of that, actually being tired a lot, just because there's so much energy put into the body and the mind in being problem-focused, you know, what could go wrong and what might go wrong and how will that be and how will this be, that there's, you know, a resulting exhaustion, really, and an irritability sometimes. Also, you can have difficulty falling asleep with that. There's some kids who are worrying, they worry, like adults again, day and night. They have a lot of thoughts on their mind, and they're just worrying, worrying, worrying. So this can cause either difficulty falling asleep or difficulty staying asleep or having a restless, unrestful sleep. So the end result of all of this is that the child may not function as well as she otherwise could in school, and, you know, may be a little bit miserable to be around and also annoying with all of those worries. So, but that, when it comes to that level, is actually an anxiety disorder. Now, again, everybody worries sometimes. If the worrying is really disrupting your child's sleep and well-being or her functioning, then we might go for an assessment and find out, is this an anxiety disorder or not? Okay, now there's another category of anxiety called phobias. And I think we all know phobias, and we probably all have a phobia or two. It's not that unusual to have a fear of something or other, whether that's in adults, you know, fears of airplanes and, I don't know, could be, well, let's look at children's fears, okay, because they have phobias of dogs and cats and spiders, needles, balloons sometimes. Small kids often have a phobic reaction to clowns or people dressed up in costumes at amusement parks and so on. Phobias can be really a fear of almost anything that could represent danger. Now, see, nobody has a phobia of a pencil, because pencils don't have anything dangerous they could do to you. But needles, you know, they could hurt, and so we could become phobic of that. And spiders, well, they could bite, and so we could become phobic of that, and phobic of heights, and so on. But only people who have anxiety genes will ever become phobic, really. Now, phobic means that when even thinking about approaching the experience of the phobic item, like having a spider near you, for example, or if you're afraid of an animal, a little small animal, whatever, having that, being near that animal, if you're truly phobic, you'll have a complete panic attack. And a panic attack is an overwhelming physical reaction, a rush of adrenaline that results in sometimes trembling or shaking or sweating, heart palpitations, sometimes feeling dizzy or lightheaded, feeling upset stomach, all kinds of maybe chills and hot flashes, and, you know, feeling like you're just going to fall apart completely or, you know, even die. In fact, panic attacks in adults are often confused with heart attacks. That's how strong the symptoms are. Many people go to the emergency room to check out whether, in fact, they're having a heart attack. And a large number of such people find that what they had was a panic attack. But that's how strong panic can be, and it can be strong in children as well. If you've ever seen a child having panic, they're like out of control. And it just, you know, they become violent, you know, trying to get away from the thing, crazy kind of. And that's the anxiety driving adrenaline through their system, because they feel like they're in an emergency situation. So that's what a real phobia is. Now, a lot of kids have fears, not quite, you know, what we just described in terms of a phobic reaction. They're just like afraid of that spider, but they could be in the same room with it. They could look at it. They're not that comfortable, but, you know, it's not that phobic reaction that we're talking about. In fact, fears are really, really common in children. Fears of, again, lightning and thunder and animals and the same things that you might be phobic about, but at a much lower level. And there can be specific fears, like fears of something that's in front of you that you can see, like a fear of a bumblebee. A lot of kids have that. Or they can be vague fears, like fears of the dark and things that lurk in the dark and fears of monsters and things that we don't really see. So young children have a lot of that second kind of fears, and a lot of children just outgrow that. If those fears persist, you know, where a child is actually fearful well into adolescence, then again, that might be a distinguishing feature for some sort of anxiety rather than just the normal fears of childhood. Fears, even if they're not phobic, are very unpleasant for a child to have. I mean, a lot of kids have trouble going to sleep in their own room because they're afraid of the noises they hear outside the window, they're afraid of robbers entering the house, they're afraid of those things in the closet that are lurking in the dark and all that stuff. It can make it difficult for them to fall asleep or go to sleep and so on, which might bring us into the next category of disorders, which would be separation anxiety. Now, this disorder is most commonly seen in children. It's one of the disorders that, you know, we see less in adults. But in separation anxiety, a child needs somebody with her. And, you know, he just and is very upset when that person's going to be separated from them. So now, as what we were talking about before is sometimes you need a child wants a person to go to sleep with at night because they're afraid of the dark. That would really be about fear of the dark. But the separation anxiety would be if the child was afraid of a person leaving them. We see this most often when a small child is going to school for the first few years. Sometimes those first days or first weeks of school are really painful to experience for both parent and child because the child clings on to the parent for dear life and is completely, again, overwhelmed, sometimes approaching the level of that panic attack that we talked about before. And they just cannot deal with the fact that they're going to say goodbye now to the parent. And that this could happen also when a parent goes out for the evening. Sometimes it happens with a sibling as well as a parent or any other caregiver. It can happen when the parents are going away for a couple of days for sure. The child can, you know, be very, very tearful and overwhelmed and feel like they just can't cope. So that's another form of anxiety that many, many children have, and most of them will outgrow that. But some of them, when, again, it's approaching the panic level and they're having trouble functioning or moving, you know, in the world without somebody, those hellos and goodbyes, those transitions, you know, if they're really painful like that, not the hellos, just the goodbyes, then it might point to an anxiety disorder. Now, there's another type of anxiety, which is called a social phobia. A social phobia is a very painful form of anxiety that affects adolescents and adults. In children, smaller children, you know, maybe one day we're going to diagnose them with social phobia, but right now we tend to diagnose them with shyness. You know, we use that name, which I don't know if that helps them or not, but usually a shy person will grow up, and if that shyness does not go away, then like if it really persists and inhibits the person from speaking in front of the class or from calling up a friend to go out or from going to a party and all of that stuff, instead of calling it shyness, we're going to call it a social phobia. And again, this can lead to a panic attack. For example, if a person had to give a talk in front of the class and just the fear was so overwhelming that all that adrenaline was released again, then that panic attack would be a symptom of the social phobia. Although you can have social phobia without panic attacks as well. It's just the anxiety is so strong that it inhibits the person from being in public places or, you know, initiating activities that would take them to a public place, or sometimes even doing things like not just speaking in public, but even writing in public, doing anything in front of people. So, you know, there's different levels of social phobia, some more mild and some more intense. But the person who experiences that kind of fear around people is just so uncomfortable a lot of the time because the world is full of people. Now, another type of anxiety is something called obsessive compulsive disorder. And this is, again, diagnosed mostly in adolescents and adults, but we see the beginnings of it in children, and I think this is one of the disorders that will become more and more diagnosed in children as we get more expert at diagnosing things. We see that a child who has lots of rituals and sometimes moves into this category of anxiety, and parents sometimes go there with the child accidentally, because what happens is normal children all have rituals. We have, let's say, the bedtime ritual where the kid wants a kiss goodnight. And then some of those children might want two kisses goodnight, or maybe one on the cheek and one on the head. And then some kids, you know, might want one on the toes and one on the cheek and one on the head. You know, so it goes on like this. And normal little toddlers are very eccentric and cute. And, you know, so here's mom kissing the feet, the toes, and the head. But now the difference will be in an anxious child with OCD tendencies. OCD stands for obsessive compulsive disorder, right? So if the child has those tendencies, then the child actually becomes anxious if the mother doesn't kiss him on the foot and the cheek and the head. And, you know, the kid can have a full-blown temper tantrum, which is really a form of a panic attack, where, you know, the kid can't function now. if he's not kissed in just that way. And what happens in children with OCD tendencies is that the anxiety spreads. So we have this ritual about the kissing, let's say, and then we're going to have another ritual about how the dolls need to be placed on the bed. And then we're going to have another ritual about what order the dolls can be taken off the bed. And, you know, pretty soon the parent finds herself standing on her head pretty well, like, you know, doing funny things for this kid, thinking that the child is eccentric, but maybe the child is quite anxious with the beginnings of this disorder. And there is a way for parents to help children with OCD tendencies, and which is kind of a painful treatment, but it works, and that is to not do those weird things, to stop doing them altogether. When a child is asking for something that nobody except a parent would do, okay, then it's time to pull back and let the child have that tantrum just a couple of times, and even explain to the child, this isn't good for you, what's going on here, you know, like you need to... You know, one kiss or two kisses is enough. You know, 10 kisses, we're not doing anymore. You know, and things like that. You know, we're not putting all the spoons lined up just this way. We're just going to have this spoon. And no, you know, this cup doesn't look dirty to me. And so, you know, you're going to have this cup. And just let the child have a couple of temper tantrums about it, but do not give in. And in this way, the brain will actually change over to another channel, you know, the not OCD channel. Well, there's a lot more you could... learn about what to do about that. There are books and the professionals who could guide you if you suspect your child is behaving, I'll say, in an OCD-ish way, because the child might not necessarily be diagnosed with OCD when they're first showing symptoms. What you might be trying to do is help prevent symptoms from becoming a diagnosable illness. And then there's another anxiety disorder called post-traumatic stress disorder. And this one happens to people who have the anxiety gene and have a traumatic experience happen. So not all people who experience traumatic things end up with post-traumatic stress disorder. A traumatic incident could be a car crash or watching somebody be wounded or hurt, or, you know, sometimes children have unfortunate experiences just being in a schoolyard. They might watch somebody fall over and faint, or somebody... You know, it occasionally happens. It happened at our local school here that a little child just fell over and died in front of all the other kids. Now, the ones who have the vulnerability to anxiety may find themselves with the kind of symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, which are kind of reliving the experience over and over, talking about it, thinking about it, seeing it, remembering it, having trouble moving it out of the mind. And as a result, having nightmares about it, sleep disturbance, a lot of feelings of anxiety and upset. It can be, you know, really an unpleasant condition to have post-traumatic disorder, but it's a disorder that actually responds very quickly to some of the new treatments we have in psychology, such as there's something called EMDR, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which works really well for removing trauma quickly from the system. And also there's something a little bit more experimental called EFT, or emotional freedom technique, or more generically energy psychology, which takes trauma out of the system very quickly, so that a child who was having intense anxiety and lots of nightmares, lots of feelings of helplessness or worries about death or lots of revisiting the thing over and over and over and over and over again, all of a sudden, after a treatment or two, sometimes has no more symptoms left. So, you know, these two treatments are good to look at. And there's a website that might be helpful here called schoolmademucheasier.com. Again, that's schoolmademucheasier.com. That explains what that last treatment is all about, that EFT. So you can look that up there. And in terms of helping anxious children, there are a number of treatments. If you think that if you're concerned about your child, first have the child assessed. Let's try and get a professional to determine whether the child is just a normal kid or a child who has some anxiety. And the reason you want that assessed is because anxiety is a painful disorder that tends to kind of just worsen over time. It spreads. Anxiety spreads to more and more things. So if you can halt it in its track, you can put the child out of not only current misery, but also future misery. you might look up also, there's a website, bachflowers.com, B-A-C-H, flowers.com. And that website will explain a nice treatment as a first step intervention for some anxiety feelings. Let's call it feelings of anxiety and nervousness and worry and all that stuff. There, it's a naturopathic, harmless kind of treatment that can help. It's really well suited to kids. So you can look that up and try that before you try any heavy duty other kinds of treatments. But if that doesn't quickly help your child, like I would say within a matter of a few weeks, if you're not seeing results, you can consult a mental health professional for an anxiety treatment, if that's what the professional thinks is appropriate here, like cognitive behavioral therapy or play therapy, certain kinds of therapies for children, even art therapies and so on, that might help them with their anxieties. And in adolescents particularly that have unmanageable anxiety, a trip to the psychiatrist can yield medical treatment, such as with psychotropic medications and so on. Although there is a whole range of things you can do before that if you want. And a lot of people want to try all the natural things before they hit the medications. But if your child is suffering, you know, you really want to take care of the kid because anxiety is very painful. So none of this stiff upper lip stuff. Just make sure your child gets the help that he or she needs. So don't worry about all this, right? Just, be aware and try and help your child whenever they do need help.